So that completeness is dependent upon relationship. Right? So his completeness is, he is the fountainhead of all relationships, of all rasas, of all anything. Anything that's going on in this world, anything that's going on, well, let's say anything going on in the cosmic creation, is because he's part of it. Right? So he's complete. So that makes him, as mentioned here, he is everything within our experience and beyond. Because there's elements that are beyond our experience. Like that, we don't know. Like that, we always try to put everything into our experience, right? Want to know something. We want to know that, you know, the time, you know, the latitude and longitude and time, you know, when we came into the material world. You know, how we, you know, things like that. How Krishna died, we try to bring within our perspective. But the thing is Krishna is everything that is that and what's beyond. Does that make sense? Right? So what's beyond, then that becomes very special. Right? That's something, we can't relate to it, but it still is there. Krishna in one, Prabhupada in one purport is talking about how Krishna is beyond spiritual. Right, because we use the term spiritual technically to be non-material. You understand? Material is there. What's beyond that, what's not material, that's spiritual. So in that category, you can say, yes, Krishna is spiritual. But generally, we take spiritual meaning the spiritual world, the spiritual manifestation. Right? So Krishna is beyond that because he's the origin of it. So he's even beyond spiritual. He's in his own category. But he, out of his kindness, he relates to us with what we can understand through the spiritual nature, through the material nature. Then we can have a relationship. Does that make sense? So that's there, because otherwise he has aspects that are beyond. He is the creator. We are created. So the created will have aspects of the creator, but the creator has beyond what the created has. Like that. So on those aspects, it's not that that puts him in a superior position. Right. So then these are all the different things. So now the Tattva Sutra, chapter 1, Tattva Prakarana, the truth. Eko paratara nanyat. Oh, no, excuse me. That's Madhvacharya, the nine Navapramayas. This is Eka Paro Nanyaha. The Supreme is one, he has no rival. Commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The Shruti Shastra declares, there is one Supreme God, he has no rival. There are not many gods. Here someone may protest. If it were so that there is only one Supreme God and no other gods, then that one God would have to perform by himself all the many duties involved in creating, maintaining, and destroying the universes. He would have to perform them all without any help from anyone else. Right? To refute this protest, the author of the sutras speaks the following words. Right? Who's the author of the sutras? Close. Getting closer. Then after Madhva? Yeah, then after that? Yes, but in between, since we were following, that's where the answer we were trying to get to, but in between then you had Rupa, Sanatan, Jiva, Krishnadas, Narottam, Vishwanath, Jagannath, and Bhakti. Okay, so the author of the sutras here, this means Tattva Sutras, not Vedanta Sutras. Okay, so we'll be studying for the next sometime the Tattva Sutras. So here he's saying is that to refute, the author of the sutras speaks this. So he's not saying, I say this. He's saying the author is saying this. He's speaking about himself in third person. Sutra 2. Agunopi sarva shaktir ameya yatvat. Because he is limitless, he has all powers, even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of material nature. Right? In other words, He's established that he's the supreme Lord. He has no rival. There are not many gods. Someone will say, but then that means he has to do everything himself. Right? We hear that all these other gods are doing all this stuff. Right? So there must be a mistake here. Right? Indra's taking care of all the clouds and lightning bolts and all that. You know, you think God sends the lightning bolts and the guy turns into a pile of ash. But who is sending that lightning bolt? It's Indra. Right? So therefore, you know, the other people are doing all this work. Right? You know what I'm saying? The earth opens up and people all fall inside with their golden calf and all that kind of stuff. But Bhumi Devi's doing that. So, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So all these different things are happening, you know, like that. The water is parting and then they're going through, but then the Egyptians don't get through. Right? That. So that, Varuna is doing. Does that make sense? But the point is these are all Krishna's qualities, all his potencies. So he's doing it through his potencies, through his agents. It doesn't mean he's not doing it. So therefore, then he's making the point here, he is limitless. He's not limited that only if he does it, it gets done. Right? So he has all powers, even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of material nature. So he has all the power, he gets everything done, but he's not affected by the modes. Right? Because for him, he's dealing with his yoga maya. Remember, we have the as we were saying before, Bhaktivinoda was explaining that you have the Sarup Shakti, right? And this Sarup Shakti then has so many is the complete potency of the Lord. All the potencies of the Lord are contained within the Sarup Shakti. Right. Now, when the Sarup Shakti is applied upon the Sandini potency, then you get all the existence and the Dham and everything else like that. When it's applied upon the Samvit, right? Then you get all the specific devotees that are involved in the the servitorship, friendship, parental rasas. You know, all the different activities, the pastimes going on. All the basic understandings of all those different things, that's all happening. Right? When it's applied on the Hladini, then the love that is shared by Krishna and the devotees, the conjugal devotees of conjugal rasa, all these different things manifest. Right? So that when the same Shakti is then applied upon the material energy, right, then you get goodness, passion, ignorance. Does that make sense? So, the same internal potency is being applied, but it's whether it's dealing with the spiritual manifestation or the material manifestation. And so, therefore, it'll act, you know, in its perfect way in the spiritual world, and it'll act according to the modes here. The same functions go on, but they're contaminated by the modes. So your goodness, passion, ignorance. Your ignorance is your basis of existence here. Everything, your whole existence is based on ignorance. I am this, I'm born here, I'm part of this family, I'm this tall, I'm this intelligent, I'm so, all these different things. You know what I'm saying? So we'll say, oh yes, no, I'm, so many, meters tall, 1.67 meters tall. But then if you go to the bridge and then you're attacked by the guy there in Monty Python, he cuts you off at the knees and then you're suddenly, 35 centimeters shorter. So now your identification has changed. So it's actually ignorance that you consider yourself that high. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole idea, is that things can change here. So it's ignorance that you say, I am this, because we're actually the soul. So our whole existence is all based on ignorance. And from that, then everything here manifests is this ignorance that we see all the stuff around us. And it is actually ignorance, because we don't know that it's Krishna's potencies. We just see it as, our house and our car and our front lawn and our backyard and our barbecue and all these different things, right? But it's actually ignorance. So all the things that we can perceive is all ignorance, right? Then our interaction, our relationships, that's based on passion. We have something we want from it. Right? And then our experiences then are generated from goodness. because that's the mind. So our what we gain from trying applying our desires on what we see, then that's our experience. That's some other goodness. Does that make sense? So Krishna is unaffected by this because he is dealing with the Swarup Shakti. The Swarup Shakti then gets everything done, whether it's in the spiritual or the material world. So he's only dealing with the Yoga Maya. Right? But she applies that either on the Sambit, Sandini, Haladini, or on the modes of nature. Does that make sense? And therefore gets the various works done of the spiritual world or the material world. So in this way, he never touches them, even though he gets everything done. Because his energies do it. But whatever he thinks or desires is what happens. Right? So it's not, he's not dependent upon his potencies like that, because he's non-different from them. But at the same time, there's difference. This is what makes him who he is. Right. As it mentioned, he's beyond that. So then here, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to Mantra 5, in this connection, two words the revealed scriptures often apply to the Lord, saguna, with qualities, and nirguna, without qualities, are very important. The word saguna does not imply that when the Lord appears with perceivable qualities, he must take on a material form and be subject to the laws of material nature. For him, there is no difference between the material and spiritual energies, because he is the source of all energies. As the controller of all energies, he cannot at any time be under their influence, as we are. The material energy works according to his direction. Therefore, he can use that energy for his purposes without being influenced by any of the qualities of that energy. In this sense, he is nirguna without qualities. Nor does the Lord become formless at any time, for ultimately he is the eternal form, the primeval Lord. His impersonal aspect, or Brahman effulgence, is but the glow of his personal rays, just as the sun's glows are the glow of the sun god. Right? So he's nirguna in that he's unaffected by the material modes. Not that he doesn't have qualities, because he's doing everything through his qualities. Right? So that's important. He has his qualities, he's in control of those qualities, he's never controlled by them. He gets everything done by that, so therefore he's near guna, means he's not affected, he's not under the gunas. Right? Does that make sense? He's uncontaminated. You know, it's just like you're cooking, right? You're using the spoon and stirring and all that. So you're controlling the cooking, but you never get burned. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The sutra means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the modes of nature, and he has all powers. This is so because he is limitless, which is to say that he cannot be measured or understood by direct perception of the material senses or by any other material means. This is described in the following words of Svetasvatara Upanishad. Right? He is limitless, so when you take on this means you cannot perceive him, because we'll say something has a material quality because it can be perceived by material senses. So he is beyond that, so he can't be perceived by the material senses. That makes sense? So that makes him technically nirguna. But he has all qualities like that, but those qualities can't be perceived by the senses. So it's only by his mercy he manifests so that you can actually see his qualities. But otherwise, they can't be seen with the material senses. Does that make sense? You know, it'd be like saying, by the Lord's mercy, your thermometer can tell what color the wall is. You know, it's only by the Lord's grace. It doesn't happen. It's only by his mercy you can see, or you can smell it, touch. Does that make sense? So now, quoting from Svetasvatara Upanishad, his potencies are multifarious, and thus his deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.35, Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Okay. Perceived and hypothesized by seeing and taking, in other words, you'll see things, take help of the intelligence. From that, then you can understand something's going on, that the Lord is there. Right? Because otherwise, how does the living entity have the quality? The jiva has a certain amount of qualities, right? But they're specific to that jiva. So how is it that the jiva can come into this world and take on any form in 8,400,000 species? And within that, there's variety. So all those different qualities that are manifest, how would that happen? Right? How can it happen? Conditioning by the modes of nature. So the quality is coming from the jiva, or the quality is coming from the modes of nature?
The modes.
Okay, so it's coming from the modes there. But now, where is ultimately the modes, because there you're dealing with dead matter, where does that get it from? Mahamaya, okay. But now, as we were discussing before, is the Srup Shakti is being applied upon the modes of nature, right? Then you get all the different manifestations and qualities. But the point is the potency is whose potency?
Krishna's.
So it's Krishna's qualities. You understand? So the unlimited qualities we see in this world, that's Krishna. That's coming from Krishna. So if the person has a quality, that must be coming from Krishna. It's not coming from the soul. Yes.
Is that why that part in Bhagavad Gita when it says like...
You speak a little louder.
That part in Bhagavad Gita, like when it says...
Means louder, means you can hear it.
Like in Bhagavad Gita, that part where it says like, of aquatics and the shark and stuff, is that...
Saying, of aquatics and the shark,
is that saying like...
Yeah, that's saying, that means that points it out, because... things that are outstanding, you'll notice. You know, he wouldn't say, "I am the slowness of slugs," you know, like that. You know. So, but that is, he is that quality also. Why is a slug a slug? Because you think it's slow. It's whatever quality is in a slug, it's still coming from Krishna. But no one's going to be, "Yeah, that's inspiring," you know, like that. You know, does that make sense? So therefore, take things that are inspiring, you know, of mountains, he's the Himalaya, of this, he's that, you know, so. But he's everything, but that's just the start. Means as it is, that's a whole lot. That's three chapters of stuff to think about. You know? Does that make sense? You know, otherwise, yes, you know, he is the dimple in this rock. He's the other dimple in this rock. He's even the dimple on this side in this rock. In fact, he's the dimple on this other rock. Also, you know what I'm saying? You know, so that people would fall asleep. If you talk about sharks and Himalaya and ocean, and, you know, and notice that it moves around, you know, like that, you know. You have cheaters, I'm the cheat, you know, like that. All these things. Then it works. You catch it. Does that make sense? So all the qualities are there. So this is what you see. You see it with your senses. Then with the help of the intelligence, you hypothesize that, oh, this is what's connecting in the Shastra. Then you'll be able to perceive it. Then you can see it, actually. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that the Shruti is heard from that authority. Then you'll contemplate it, right? In other words, you'll have to use the elements of Anuman with what you've seen from the senses, Pratyaksha and Anuman combined, but it's based on authority. So that will actually get you then realization, right? By contemplation, you get knowledge. By studying the Shastra, you get knowledge. But by applying it, then you get realization. So then actually, you can perceive with your senses what the Shastra talks about, right? So that's what this kind of study is for, right? You're supposed to actually be able to take this, apply it, and see what it's talking about, right? So that means every living entity has unique qualities. Right? There's some common qualities, therefore you say it's a tree, or it's a bus, or, you know, something else. But everything has a unique quality. And that unique quality is coming from Krishna. Krishna is unlimited. So only He can do that. Does that make sense? Like that. So he has to be the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, because only he has unlimited qualities. Only he can maintain those. Only he can destroy them. You can't create something beyond yourself. You can't maintain something beyond yourself. You can't destroy something beyond yourself. Does that make sense? Yeah? Bhagavatam 4:27. The individual soul is one, pure, non-material, and self-effulgent. He is the reservoir of all good qualities, and he is all-pervading. He is without material covering, and he is the witness of all activities. He is completely distinguished from other living entities, and he is transcendental to all embodied souls. Bhagavatam 11:7:23. Although I am the Supreme Lord, can never be captured by ordinary sense perception. Those situated in human life may use their intelligence and other faculties of perception to directly search for me through apparent and indirect ascertained symptoms. Right? He's saying that he can't be captured, understood by the senses. But when you work on the Shastra, then only can you, through direct and indirect means, then ascertained by the symptoms. You understand? So now, if we look at it this way, because we started off, why is it that we take this, how do you say? Anaya Prahatattvam. Is that we take that and establish that as part of establishing Godhead. Right? It means everything is established on that, but we're comfortably putting it in here. Because the point is Krishna can't be perceived by the senses or the intelligence. But if that senses intelligence are based on Shastra, then you can perceive the Lord directly and indirectly through symptoms. Right? So that means the Shastra has to be Krishna. Right? Right? Vedanta Vit Vedakrit Eva Chaham. He writes it, he compiles it, he knows it, he is it. Right? So therefore, that's how you can perceive. Now, taking that line of thought, if we step further, is there any basis for anyone using anything else other than the Vedic literatures to know the Supreme Lord? Does that make sense? Is there any other books, any other bodies of knowledge other than the Shastra, the authorized Shastra, that can show you the Supreme Lord? Having now heard these points from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the Bhagavatam, is it possible? No. That means any other body of knowledge, you can start there, and it may give you some nice understandings and nice perspectives, but still, unless that is based on authority, somebody is not happy. Festival's over, what to do? Right? Does that make sense? So that means then we will not be able to perceive the Lord through these. In other words, unless they are connected to the Shastra, then let alone see God, you will not be able to see devotional service through them. Right? Because devotional service is non-different from Krishna, because it's devotion to Krishna. Right? So it's non-different from him and his internal potency. Him and his internal potency, that interaction, that's devotion. We can be assistant to that. So this establishes that without the Vedic literatures, there is no question of devotional service or understanding God. There is just, it's not possible. Like that. One can get any other kind of book, learn any other kind of knowledge, and be very comfortable. Yes, I am learning so much in devotion. You're not learning anything. If learning is going on, it's what is connected to the Lord. That is then useful. But you have to make sure it's connected, because you're dealing with knowledge. So you're dealing with the intelligent. You're dealing with mechanics. So it has to be. It's not sentiment. Sentiment, you just feel like it, and then it's done. Right? So you may feel like it, but the point is you're saying knowledge. But you feel like it, I'd like my knowledge to be, but the knowledge has to be. That means it has to be done mechanically. Does this make sense? So it's only sentimental that the idea is that I'm taking all my material stuff and connecting it to Krishna if I'm not following the Vedic literatures and the Vedic application. Does that make sense? So that means you can't connect it to Krishna if it's not following the Vedas and Vedic culture. It's not possible. One will say yukta vairagya, but where does the term yukta vairagya come from? Is that an English term? Is that something all grandmothers tell their grandchildren, you know, when they're, you know, feeling down and gloomy and all that? Don't worry, it's yukta vairagya. You know? Is it? Or is it something we get from the Vedic literatures? So we can't quote the Vedic literatures to establish the modern to say that we don't need the Vedic literatures. Right? You have to establish it on its own. If the modern has any standing on its own, establish it on its own. Prove it on its own. But God is imperceivable to them. Therefore, it won't work. Therefore, this is the only way it's done. Right? Of course, then one has to go on to define, well, what is Vedic culture? Right? So that is the principles by which one is able to understand oneself, the Supreme Lord, the material energy, and all that's connection to the Lord through devotional service. So it still means it's based on Shastra. In other words, the Shastra gives the basis for the application of one's devotion to the Lord, one's knowledge and understanding of the Lord. Then you have more or less ideal situations to apply it in. Does that make sense? But in any case, it still has to have that connection. It doesn't have the connection, it's not connected. It will not give you the result you're looking for. You will not be able to perceive Krishna through it. Does that make sense? It's just very straightforward, logical. It is our philosophy. It's not this is something new or no, this is what it's just showing the technical way it works. You know what I'm saying? You get in the car, you take the key, you put it in a little slot, you know, you turn it, you know, push on the gas, and the thing starts. Okay, so then that's what we say. You know, use the key, start the car. Right? But then the thing is now you explain how you turn the key, then that, you know, then, you know, makes the contacts and the electric thing, then that goes through and it goes through the distributor and all that. That goes through the spark plugs. And then you also have it goes to the electricity and then starts turning the little thing, the starter. And so with all those things now going on, then, you know, then the pistons and all that it fires and that. And then the motor starts to turn on its own. The starter is not needed anymore. You don't have to keep, turning the key. So it's still the same thing. All it is just been technically broken down and explained. Does this make sense? Yes.
How does that relate to someone in the West who's just purely preaching and they may be following externals of the culture?
Externals of the culture means?
Because they're connected through preaching.
Means preaching. What are they preaching? Kavi?
No, I'm not talking about that.
The secret?
No.
So then what are they preaching?
Service to Krishna.
Yeah, based on?
Shastra.
Yeah, so then that's connected. That's the thing. It's easy to connect, because Krishna is everywhere. It's the easiest thing to do to connect to Him. You actually have to work at it to be an illusion. You know what I'm saying? The natural mentality of the soul is surrender to Krishna, love for Krishna. So you have to be, very determined to act other than that. So even though it seems so complex, it's so simple to do. That's all. And the culture is, what's the basic culture? The basic culture means, that's the thing of the Vedic, it can always be brought down to certain qualities, because the qualities are Krishna. Then you have the manifestation of those qualities, right? You understand? We were discussing before on this masculine and feminine principle, that the quality is Krishna. Then the manifestation of the facilities to obtain that. That's Lakshmi. You know what I'm saying? Because that's there to serve Krishna's God. So you take the quality of cleanliness. Okay? That's the quality. That's Krishna. That's universal. You can apply it anywhere. So this idea of Vedic culture doesn't apply anywhere. That's like saying the sun doesn't shine everywhere, or there's no air everywhere. And everyone means in India, okay, they breathe, you know, air in India. But in America, we don't. We breathe carbon, you know, monoxide, you know. Like that. We're just being practical here, you know. Man has evolved and everything, you know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know. So it's still the same. There's nothing different. People still eat food, right? The principle is you eat food. What kind of food you eat, that's a detail. Right? But the quality of food, that's pervades everywhere. The concept of family, the concept of economics, the concept of duty, of dharma, of religion, the concept of sense gratification, the concept of some kind of elevation and freedom from material entanglement. These are universal. Anywhere you'll find them in any culture to some degree or another. So God is easy enough to find. It's just a matter of whether you want to find it. Now, the manifestation of that, then the Vedas will give what's an ideal manifestation, because if you're in the spiritual world, you don't have anybody's bad karma to get in the way of an ideal manifestation of a form that matches that quality of Krishna. Therefore, that's the perfect form. That form then is reflected into the material world, right? Because when we want to come to the material world, we don't say that this spiritual world is nonsense. We think it's great. We just think instead of Krishna enjoying it, we should be enjoying it. So what we want is, you know, heaven on earth, goodwill to men. Right? We want the spiritual world right here, right now, that I can enjoy. Right? So therefore, the natural form of it we see in the other ages is exactly like in the spiritual world. Just, it's temporary here. And what taste you can gain from it is very minimal, because you're dealing with dead matter. But the form is the same. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea, is that it's there. Then you have from that, depending upon the situation you're in, then lesser and lesser manifestations. Does that make sense? So the point is this. So yukta vairagya means I understand the quality to be obtained. I understand the natural form that it comes in. And I try to get as close to, you know, in other words, I, for my situation I'm in, use the best possible facilities to obtain that quality, to serve that quality. Does that make sense? So even if I don't know what the Vedic tradition would be, I know the quality, and I, whatever is around me, I try to affect that quality. You know what I'm saying? So this is the difference. This, are we trying to eat Western food, or we're trying to nourish the body? Are we trying to offer something to Krishna? Right? Whatever we eat, we offer to Krishna. That's what he says in Gita. Right? So if you're eating some Western, you know, recipes, then that's offered to Krishna. So, which is the important thing? The offering to Krishna or eating the Western food? You understand? If it's the offering to Krishna, that's yukta vairagya. If it's Western food, that's attachment. You have offered it to Krishna and all that, but actually the main thing is you. It's all about you. So that's very neophyte. That's sakam. Well, the other one is you're taking whatever it is, doing it for Krishna, his standards, and pleasing him. That's nishkarma. That's yukta vairagya. You understand? So this other idea is just whatever my attachments are, whatever my perception of the world is, in its just regular conditioned form, if I just do everything like that and don't have to restrict or change it at all and all that, but at the same time I'm a devotee, you know, when I chant and, you know, do a few things like that, everything else somehow or another is now magically yukta vairagya. How is that? How would that happen? You know what I'm saying? He comes to the temple, puts $100 in the hundi. like that. And then, you know, goes, catches a flight, goes to the Bahamas and stays in the 5-star hotel and stays there and spends, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, you know, just having a good time. Then how is all that ten thousands of dollars connected to Krishna? And he'll just say, oh, it's Yukta Vairagya. Well, how? Nice, great. But tell us how. And then they'll start pulling out, oh, you're just being intellectual and personal, or just a jnani, or, you know, you don't understand, or, you know, all this kind of emotional stuff. You know, all 8-year-old stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, is they can't explain it. So here we're saying, well, is it based on Shastra? That's the point. You have to be able to base it on Shastra. Krishna says, your work and recreation must be balanced. So that means he's just referred to recreation. This comes automatically. Recreation is what people like to do. So you don't have to preach about it. You know what I'm saying? You have to preach about doing duties. Therefore, all the talk is about the duty you have to do. Recreation is going to come anyway. You understand? So therefore, that's not what has to be expressed. Does that make sense? So then the point is then educate yourself. Prabhupada's giving plenty of stuff how to connect all these things to Krishna. He's giving plenty of examples of how the Vedic culture works. So in our example there of cleanliness, that's the quality. Okay, so now here we have a broom, we have a bucket, we have a rag, we have some water. Right? So that would be your natural manifestation of how that cleanliness would be obtained. But let's say you don't have all that. You don't have a broom. You know, like that. So then, you know, you'll just use the rag and the water. What if you don't have the water or the broom? Then you take the rag and try to dust the place and kind of pick everything up. But you're trying, you know cleanliness, and you're trying to obtain cleanliness. That's Yukta Vairagya. But to just say, oh, doing it with a rag's enough, that's all my mom ever did. You know, what's the big fanatic about, you know, you have to use a broom and a bucket and, you know, water and all that. That's how stupid the presentation is. Not well thought out, not well informed, not very cultured at all. Mileccha's yavanas are known for being filthy, stinky, dirty. Like that. As long as you can't smell it, then that's it. You know, French through history have been known as the most refined and cultured in the Western, you know, thing. But when you just get up in the morning, wash your face and hands, that's called a French bath. You know, you just put on some perfume. That's it. If the perfume's stronger than what you smell like, great. And if it's not, put on some more perfume. And that's it. There were no toilets in Versailles. 1,000 rooms, no toilets. Not one toilet. Something's going weird here. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea, you know, halal means, I've heard, I don't know if it's true, but I heard, you know, Queen Elizabeth I took 2 baths in her life. You know, both in milk, of course, like that. One when she was, I think, you know, very small or something, and one when she died. You know, but in between, it doesn't seem that there was a whole lot. It may be true, maybe not. This is just a rumor going around. You know, rumors, you know, so it could be anything. You know? Maybe she had 3, yeah?
They said they used to have his clothes stitched on them.
Yeah.
So how could you do
that? Yeah, you have to stitch it on because it was like, yeah, because it was so special the way it was. It wasn't, you know, zippers are definitely going to ruin it, buttons and all that. Yeah. So, all these different things, so they're not known for cleanliness. They may, those who are more sophisticated then are a little more what they'll call clean. But technically that clean is like tidy. There's no dirt. But it doesn't have purity. Purity is not a consideration. You know what I'm saying? That's how you get the Western idea of clean, is you go to the bathroom, you know, at the manor, and you put on these special magic plastic shoes, and you go in there and do whatever you want to do, and then come out, take the shoes off, and you're clean. But, you know, based on what shastra, based on what reality? You know what I'm saying? Because it's simply sophisticated. If I can't see the dirt or smell it, it doesn't exist. Right? It's one part of cleanliness, right? The rule in the Dharma Shastra is as long as you can see the stain or as long as the bad smell is there, you have to clean it with the appropriate materials. Right? So that is part of it, but then there's the element of purity. So there's no understanding of that. So with all the proper understanding of cleanliness and purity, you know, then, because Krishna is the supreme pure, so cleanliness is basically, you could say, more of a symptom of purity. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's also funny is then when the Westerners bump into these shortcuts on purity, but then they don't consider the cleanliness aspect. You know, wool is pure, so therefore you can wear it anywhere, do anything with it. But if something dirty falls on it, that spot that's dirty is dirty. And even though it's not contaminated, it doesn't mean that you haven't washed it for 2 years, it's not dirty. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of stuff is misunderstood. So then it's taken as, you know, a shortcut. Because the point is when it comes to cleanliness, those who don't follow the Vedic culture are lazy. So therefore the Yukta Vairagya generally means it's a manifestation of my laziness rather than it's a manifestation of my intelligence on how to apply the Vedic principles in a non-ideal situation. You know what I'm saying? The Vedic thing is hearing, but the modern thing is the written word. It's of more value than the spoken word. Therefore, then we see with the Acharyas, they understood this. They started presenting the spoken word as written word. You know, does that make sense? That's Yukta Vairagya. In other words, the point is communicate Krishna consciousness to, you know, others, so that they found that by the speaking, it's not as good as it was written. Right? Nowadays, the speaking backs up what's written. Right? We have this book here. Then you think something's going on. Oh, this is a course. If I just sit here and talk the same stuff, oh, it's nice, you know, it's a nice kind of seminar or workshop. That's not a real course. You know what I'm saying? Because the written word, you know, that's where it's at. So that's Yukta Vairagya. Like that. So whatever is going to work, that's the thing. So is that the best way of something is being done, some preaching method is being used, is that the best method because that's actually what gets through to the people and makes them Krishna conscious, or it's because this is what you're attached to? Right? You go to a yoga center and you talk about devotional service and chanting, you use their terminologies but you speak straight Krishna consciousness, that's Yukta Vairagya. But if you go there, use their language and beat around the bush and not actually get down to Krishna consciousness, just allude to it, that's your own attachment. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. You can say what we do straight, you just have to use those languages and those terminologies and a speed that they can assimilate it. But a drop of Krishna consciousness is still a drop of Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So we'll go to these yoga centers and sing all kinds of anything else other than the Maha Mantra. But there are Karmi yoga centers that do Hare Krishna Kirtan without one contact with any Hare Krishna devotee anywhere in the movement as an inspiration. All they know is it's a mantra. They couldn't care less which or what. They don't know that it's different. We're just thinking, oh, Hare Krishna, that's the main mantra. So if we chant something else that sounds it, then that they won't think it's Hare Krishna. But what do they care? It's just a mantra in Sanskrit. You know what I'm saying? So that's our own perceptions, our own attachments being overlaid upon that. You know what I'm saying? So we don't have to give them something else. We can give them direct Krishna consciousness. But we just have to use the languages and the forms that they're used to. That's Yukta Vairagya. The other stuff is not Yukta. That's just our own attachments. That's it. It's that simple. Does that make sense? Is that any other question on Yukta Vairagya that could take 30 seconds? Yes?
It's not Yukta Vairagya.
No, it has to be that because the class is ending now. Means you can continue what you want to say tomorrow, or continue, because we'll just continue here. Do you understand how we got into this? We were pointing that Krishna means main quality of control, and these other aspects, and then being able to perceive Him. So the Ishopanishad is about being able to perceive the Supreme Lord as He is. So that can only be done through the Shastra. So then the Shastra, taking the knowledge of the Shastra, coming in the Parampara, using one's intelligence, then the senses, then one can actually see things as they are, because Krishna is everywhere in everything. That means that everything technically can be connected to Krishna, but it still can only be connected and become if it's based on Shastra. So you can't speculatively connect something to Krishna. Just, oh, well, I like it like this. But that's not enough. That won't connect it. It has to be how Krishna has given it in the Shastra. Because those are the options that He's willing to be seen through. Because it says He has all good qualities. All bad qualities come from Him also. Right? But He, you know, He deals with the good qualities. He is the good qualities. The bad are the reflex. To have a good quality, you have to have the bad. Otherwise, how do you know it's good? Right? To have light, you have to have darkness. Then you appreciate light. You know what I'm saying? And His qualities, even uses what we call bad qualities. They're not bad qualities. Krishna goes and steals butter, and that. It's not bad quality. It adds to rasa. Here it does. It becomes the bad qualities are bad. Does that make sense? So this is what we're doing. So being able to therefore understand how that connecting everything to Krishna through Shastra, that's the actual Yukta Vairagya. But if it's not done with Shastra, then it won't be Yukta Vairagya. It may be the ultimate goal is being the result is given to Krishna, therefore it becomes connected to devotional service. But it technically is not really Yukta Vairagya. It may be Yukta Vairagya that you use something, the result got there. But the actual work itself, the consciousness that was there, is not technically connected. But by having given the results in your attachment, if you consistently do that, you will become purified where the conscious will be, and you can distinguish and connect it. The difficulty comes is that not that theoretically you couldn't go on doing it in that way. The problem is because of the material attachment, you could get distracted and stop doing that. You know what I'm saying? You're doing some karmi nonsense that you like to do and makes money, and then you give that money to Krishna. Now, you keep doing that, you will get purified where you'll start to lose your taste for that kind of engagement. But the question is whether you will continue to do it. Because you get distracted on that, you may not give the money to the temple. Does that make sense? That's why it's dangerous. That's why it's not. That's why it's considered this shouldn't be done. Does that make sense? Because it won't consistently be done for Krishna. Right, so the purification process won't be taken up. Plus, it'll also be very slow. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're running a butcher shop and giving money to Krishna. You'll become purified, but the point is it'll be much slower than if you were running a fruit stall or something like that. That makes sense. It's better results. It's better. It's more efficient. Right. You ever heard of the mafia running a fruit stall as a front? I mean, running a butcher shop as a front? No, it's always a fruit stall. It's more efficient. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda Premanandi. Right? You're in a fruit shop, they think you're more sincere. So it actually gets the word. So if you want to make God think you're sincere, then you run a fruit shop, not a butcher shop. Even the mafia knows that.